Oh, so I typed in a series of numbers. I'm not going to disclose the series of numbers, but that has contained the creature. Tommy, I went to get a haircut in my Burroughs adding machine. I went to get a haircut here in Minnesota in the Burbs. And there's this classic barbershop in a strip mall, of course, because this is the land of strip malls here. I mean, I guess the whole country is. But and there's a lovely man who's a barber, charges you next to nothing. You're in and out in 15 minutes. No fuss. Here you go. You look fabulous when you're out. You know, it's just great. Burroughs adding machine. Right there. I said, Burroughs, and I sort of started giving the guy an
Airbnb. At the barbers, huh?
At the barbers. And it's this very classic, it's this part of the Twin Cities suburbs that has kind of a retro vibe. It was like one of these early 50s, 60s suburbs. It's like a first tier suburb. Anyway, so I just thought that was funny. And the guy just, his eyes just glazed over when I was like, well, it was William Burroughs. cut up method. And, you know, he just wanted to talk about the new Top Gun movie. So that's okay. Right. Yeah. Okay. Different strokes.
Right. It's true.
Right. Well, hey, Patreon, we love you. Thank you for supporting the pod. We're into the 60s now for number of supporters. Yeah. We seem to be going strong. It's a start. Now we want to get the word out. So please tell people about the show. Share episodes. The bigger we grow the community. Which, whatever. Yeah, but it's legitimately a community. The bigger we grow the community, the more fun it's going to be. And it's going to help us continue to get great guests like our friend Tommy here. So again, very grateful you came on. Yeah. And now we're going to get into it here too for the After Dark. And Brad, I know you have ideas.
Yeah, well, Tommy and I had kind of talked before the episode about maybe we could share, you know, we're trying to present Burroughs as an important figure in the sort of the history of occultism, and as a practitioner of magic. I mean, the whole chaos magic stuff that people know about now, you can trace that right back to Burroughs, not maybe as the sole source of all of it, but the line certainly goes through him. So I thought maybe we could try to look at or talk about, you know, maybe one or maybe a couple of Burroughs's magical practice. What does it look like when we say Burroughs practicing magic? What is some example of what that looks like?
Yeah. So there could be many directions to take it in. There could be a mystical direction in which you take it in, where he's attempting to achieve intense altered states of consciousness in order to either acquire some form of divine knowledge or knowledge of the future, knowledge of his self. But then there's also more practical types of rituals where he's literally attempting to curse people.
As we've talked about, it's not white magic. This isn't like all the time. Yeah.
No, he held grudges.
Right.
And we can talk about cut up, I think, in both of as it applies to both of those ideas of magic, because he definitely uses cut up for a wide variety of purposes. Mm-hmm. Some of them to achieve altered states of consciousness. He says in a letter to Timothy Leary, this is around the time, or I should say, this is just before he turns his back on psychedelics. Because in 1961, he has a number of bad trips, and so he never really wants to do psychedelics ever again.
Oh, yeah.
But in 1960, he's having some correspondence with Timothy Leary, and he says, basically telling him he's interested in, you know, going and trying psilocybin or whatever. But he says, I have also produced pure cut-up highs, something he says to Leary, which is really interesting.
Yeah,
but he also used cut up to perform curses, and probably the most famous incidences where he would do this was using tape recorders. And so I have a couple of passages marked out in this wonderful book.
Oh, cool!
Called The Magical Universe of William S. Burroughs by Matthew Levy Stevens. And so I could read a little bit of it, or I could just sort of go over generally some of it.
I mean,
or...
if you want to read a little bit of it, that would be cool. We do that all the time on here, so that's fine. Yeah.
Sure. So this is a using cut up on tape recorders for magical purposes. So yeah, this is from The Magical Universe of William S. Burroughs. As well as the obvious step of cutting up street recordings, following Ian's example, Burroughs also began to splice in what he called trouble noises, quote unquote. Recordings of alarm bells, breaking glass, fire engines, as well as sound effects of explosions, machine guns, and riots recorded from TV. This procedure could also be accompanied by the taking of photographs, which could then be collaged or cut up in some way. For example, by cutting out the image of the intended target, quite literally removing it. The symbolic manipulations via captured image or soundtrack opened up a whole new realm of possibility. And one of the most famous incidents, or I should say, one of the most famous stories about him using these types of rituals was against a Scientology headquarters in London.
Oh, wow. Yeah. He picked big enemies, huh? That's
sure.
Yeah.
he was very interested in Scientology for a long time. Geisen introduced him to Scientology. He read Dianetics and a lot of other Hubbard stuff. And there's a lot of evidence that Scientology is a big part of his thinking when he's getting into cut-ups. In terms of, one of the primary theories of Scientology is that language has a traumatic effect on the human brain, and therefore you have to engage in certain linguistic exercises in order to purge that kind of trauma.
Not wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people say it's effective. Burroughs thought it was very effective. He actually achieved the level of clear under Scientology. Parlance. So he was very interested.
Our episodes are starting to converge on one another.
Yeah.
There's the Crowley Hubbard connection. Now Timmy Leary, Burroughs. Yeah. Yeah. Very curious. Yeah. Very strange.
But there's another incidence of him using a tape recorder, not necessarily in a cut up way, but in something he called playback. Which is a term he wrote this piece called Playback from Eden to Watergate. But there was also a book that came out about Burroughs called Playback, written by Cable McLean, where he talks about some of these things. And so there's this story. I won't read it, but I'll just sort of give you the gist of it, which I think this is maybe my favorite incident of the Burroughs curse. So there was a this is when he's teaching at Naropa University in Boulder, and he had become friends with Cable McLean, who was a student there at the time, and they became friends, lovers. McLean was apparently at a deli in a mall in Boulder, and was on opiates of some kind with his girlfriend in the deli, and they fell asleep in the deli. And the proprietor of the deli says, like, hey, you guys can't sleep here. You got to go.
Right.
And they were apparently offended by this.
Oh, boy. And, yeah. Cool. Yeah. 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 Who is this deli owner? He thinks he can just kick us out of here. Yeah.
Right. And so they tell this story to Burroughs, and he also was offended by this, right? This is discrimination against drug addicts. Yeah.
We should be able to pass out wherever we want at any time.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So he goes there on one particular day with a tape recorder, and he just makes a recording of like the ambient noise of the restaurant by himself. And then they go back some days later, and he's with McLean, and he performs what he calls a playback. So what he would do is he would have this recording of the location, and he brings it back to the same place. And then he would turn the volume all the way down on the tape player, and he would hit play, and it would start playing back the previous ambient noise in the location at you know, no volume. And then he says you would very slowly turn the volume up, right? Just gradually And he's, the purpose being that if you do this, nobody really notices what you're doing. Nobody observes what's going on.
Yeah.
Until you can play it back at full volume.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently what happened was there was a huge fight that broke out between the proprietor, the manager, and one of the staff.
Whoa.
And they nearly came to blows. Somebody got fired and kicked out. And he claimed that he caused this with the playback. This was the negative energy that he brought back. And his theory of how to do it is interesting because it's almost always related to time, and his conception of time is something that's malleable. Mm-hmm. So it was the fact that, you know, the recording is from the past, and by bringing the past into the present and sort of bending time in a particular way, you are sort of deconstructing like the order of the plays, or like the intended trajectory.
Like wave interference or something. That's kind of what I picture in my head. That's really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
I also, it makes me think about, I don't know, Kevin, maybe you've tried this. There was a little bit of a brief internet fad where there's a, I don't know, I remember what they called it, but basically what you do is you could talk into this app, and it would, it was recording you and playing you back, but the differential was like a half a second. So you're recording yourself and it's playing, and you literally can't, your ability to communicate breaks down. Like by hearing yourself a half a second ago or a half a second ago, it really like scrambles your ability to like maintain a coherent thought. So you're trying to read a sentence and it like, and it's a very weird experience.
It's like podcasting on edibles.
Yeah. Right. Or something like that. Yeah. It's like you're going fine for a minute. And then like all of a sudden you get the voice you were hearing, voice confused, and you don't know where, and you literally can't talk after.
Wow. No, I missed that.
Yeah.
One thing that occurred to me is that of all the people we've covered, short of Crowley, Burroughs is the one I would not want to have put a curse on me. I feel like Burroughs could mess you up on the astral plane.
I think that's probably right. Yeah. So it's interesting that he's doing these as a sort of a, so he'll do this as a sort of a grudge in a kind of almost like a mundane way, right? It's like these people offended him or whatever. And then he also thinks that, you know, he's also earnestly writing in a manner, sort of doing combat with these forces in a you know, as above, so below kind of manner. It's really fascinating. I mean.
Well, and Artaud did this as well. Artaud sent a magic spell to Hitler at one point. I get you. Yeah.
right. Yeah, it's not uncommon. I mean, I think this sort of practicing magic for sort of personal gain is pretty interesting. He had Burroughs too. I kind of want to hit this point because it was really interesting. He, in one of his lectures I believe it was at Naropa, he was talking about this thing called the wishing machine that somebody purportedly built. It was in a book by, I think his name is G. Harry Stein, Frontiers of Science. And it's this like little device that has like these sort of coppery inputs. And Burroughs didn't really explain exactly what it was, but apparently there's a diagram of it in this book. And you would put like, say, a photo of the subject you wanted to have a magical impact on. And then you would sort of concentrate on it, like, and they did tests. Apparently the person who built it, I can't remember the person who actually built its name, did tests of like trying to kill beetles. They would take photos of these bugs and then put it in this thing and then concentrate on killing them. And apparently it was like 90% effective. What was interesting to me about listening to Burroughs talk about this, I mean, he was giving the benefit of the doubt that this machine would work, that wishing is a sort of magic and this device could kind of amplify it. But then he was talking about that sort of out of one side of his mouth. And he was talking out of his other side of the mouth about the literary trope of wishing, as in like the story, The Monkey's Paw. And to him, the idea of actually practicing this thing and then writing about it, it was the same thing. Right. It was the idea of like, if you articulate this story, that's also sort of participating in the investigation or the practice of this magical concept. That's pretty simple. Just wishing. right? And he has these very interesting takes about it, like, don't wish for something tangible and physical and three-dimensional, because like, you don't know what's caught up in that. Try to wish for one, be specific about it, right? If it's small and specific enough, you might actually get it and not have to pull all kinds of circumstances in with you, right? And he also said something like, it can't be conditional. It can't be, I want this thing, but only if. It has to be that you actually want the specific thing. And I just thought that was really interesting. And then also, sorry for ranting here for a second, because I'm really interested too in this. There seems to be this overlay between this kind of magical thinking and people like Napoleon Hill and these others, people like Think and Grow Rich, who sort of fall into like almost like self-help. Kind of like The Secret is a more modern version of it, but these kinds of books, so it's like every generation, there's a big one that's sort of in this line. And the overlaps between them are interesting too. Do Burroughs read like Napoleon Hill and those kinds of figures?
Okay. Absolutely, yes. Yeah. And in 1978, Burroughs and Geisen come out with this book called The Third Mind, which was their most definitive statement about cut-up as a magical practice. And the third mind is a term they lift from Napoleon Hill.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Yeah. So these things are all connected. Very interesting. How cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting too, about this idea of projecting the will, because Burroughs has a famous statement where I'm not going to get it verbatim, but he basically says that, you know, in ancient societies, they say that if you were bitten by a snake, you were murdered. And I believe this. You know, so it's this idea of that there are no coincidences, really, and that this is how you identify the effects of magic in the world, is by being in a receptive state to observe synchronicities. And this was how cut-up magic works. This is how you know the playback in the restaurant works. Is you know, you don't necessarily know what the result is actually going to be before you perform the ritual, but you have to be in a particular place of open-mindedness in order to plug it into the blank.
Yeah. So would be doing the playback thing, would that be sort of like forcing a synchronicity to happen? Like, rather than observing one, it's sort of like making one happen and thereby interesting.
Yeah. Well, you're putting yourself in a position where you are expecting one, or you're looking for one to happen.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Fascinating. Well, I don't have any grudges against any deli owners, but this does, I almost do want to try this a little bit. I don't want to cause chaos, though. I just want weird stuff to happen, which maybe, you know, ultimately is the same thing.
Very cool. Yeah, go on.
I was just going to say, I think that's enough for this. And I think, Tommy, you've been so generous with your time. This has been a real pleasure. I've learned a lot, and it's been fascinating. Kevin, I don't know if you have anything.
I do have one question, if we can go on a bit. Tommy, do you want to possibly give us a little bit of a hint at what you're going to be writing about in terms of Burroughs and Twin Peaks?
Or sure.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Yeah, so my argument is that Burroughs had an impact on David Lynch, and you can see this not directly in Lynch's words, but through a lot of the network that Lynch has in the, let's say, like the post Blue Velvet era. So he has a lot of contacts with people who knew Burroughs. For example, he worked with Dennis Hopper in Blue Velvet. And Dennis Hopper and Burroughs knew each other.
Mm-hmm. Aha. Hmm.
And as well as, he gets into contact with David Cronenberg, who knew Burroughs. He works with Barry Gifford. Him and Barry Gifford ended up writing Lost Highway together, and Gifford was a friend of Burroughs.
Oh, is that right? Yeah, well, there you go. Talk about a cut-up movie.
Yeah.
Right. And it's Lost Highway is also about a man who is possessed by a demon that makes him kill his wife. So yeah, in a way... Yeah.
Wait, is that what it's about?
Of Burroughs.
Are you sure? How much time do you have? But yes, no, it kind of is, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. Wow, wild. Yeah. Call me.
Yeah.
Scary, truly frightening.
Oh,
I like to post that GIF of him lifting the camera and it's like, this is what you look like when you retweet yourself.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That is so fascinating. So you in your essay, are you going to specifically talk about Twin Peaks or sort of Lynch writ large?
Right, yeah. I talk about Lynch writ large, but I also go into Twin Peaks season 3. Mm-hmm. Well, and if you look at the original Twin Peaks, it's also about a man who is driven to murder because he's possessed. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's a similar theme. But specifically, according to season 3, the nuclear weapon is a really critical fulcrum in the whole series. And Burroughs was very interested in nuclear weapons. And in the Red Knight trilogy, nuclear radiation is a really important theme, and about its ability to create particular types of viruses that catalyze evolution. According to, let's say, archontic kind of conspiracies.
Right.
Wow. I've watched season 3 all the way through 2 times, and you mention it, and now I go, maybe I'll watch that again. Yeah. It's just so we stand Twin Peaks on this show. Absolutely. Well, brilliant. Tommy P. Cowan, thank you so much for coming on. A lot of fun. And Brad, thanks for organizing this. Yeah, we're coming back with, we're for our Patreon subscribers, it's just tonight, Brad and I are going to record a quarterly post-mortem that we do. So you're going to get a double dose of AOD tonight, dear beloved Patreon folks, and check out the magazine or the journal rather, magazine. Oh my God, correspondence!
Yeah, Kevin, come on,
I know. It's just terrible. Yeah, again, D class A.
Well, no, and these guys are doing really, they're doing really cool work. Yeah, you know, really looking at this stuff, not just sort of, you know, weird little 5-minute YouTube videos where somebody's talking about what they think Gnosticism is. This is like serious. Looking at matters of esotericism in a very serious light, and I think there is a lot to learn. So thank you for what you do, Tommy, and thank you for your time tonight. We really appreciate it. It's such a pleasure to meet you and talk to you.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you guys for all you do.
Absolutely.